The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. Live in the Israel Update with Anthony Rock, only on FIFF.
Anthony Rock, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker tov, chodesh tov. What did they say? Mishen nichnas adar marbim besimcha. It sounds like we're going to be saying that for a couple of months here.
Quite literally. Anthony, a Likud member will go to Likud members will go to the polls today to choose those who will be on the party's list to be members of Knesset in the upcoming elections. How do the parties generally choose the list? Can you explain it to us?
So the lists have to be submitted ahead of the general election by February the 21st, which is not that long far away anymore, only just a few weeks. And of course, we have in Israel a proportional representation system, which means that when we go to the polls, and I think that this is similar to South Africa, when we go to the polls, we vote for a party and not for individual members of Knesset. We don't have a system of constituencies where you vote for an individual, you vote for the party. And then, of course, all the votes across the country are summed up together, and various parties are allocated proportions, a percentage in the Knesset. And according to the percentage of the vote that they earn, that is a percentage of the Knesset members that will sit for that party in the Knesset. Of course, there is a sub-minimum number of votes that every single party who sits in the Knesset needs to attain. And I think it accounts for about three or four, maybe even, Knesset members. So if you don't get at least to the sub-minimum, then whatever votes are allocated to you then get reallocated to those parties who do succeed in exceeding the minimum, so that we don't have more of these self-interest parties, let's say, than we already have in the Knesset. Our Knesset is well known for having a lot of small parties, and so this issue of the minimum is really, really important, the threshold to be able to get members into Knesset. So in order to determine who the members of Knesset will be, every party is required to submit their list to the election committee before the election. So that will be on the 21st of February. And then according to the number of votes that they earn, the number of people from that list will then go into the Knesset in order. In other words, the people who are at the top of the list are the ones who will be elected first for that party into Knesset, and then going down the list down to the area with the gray zone where people feel that they might not have a chance of getting into the Knesset unless the party does really, really well and earns a very high proportion of the votes in the general election. So that's the general system that's used. And the way that the lists are put together is actually quite an interesting discussion, because this year it seems as if there are only three of the parties will actually hold polls, will hold primaries to elect the people who go on their lists. And so the Likud will hold their polls today. And the primary is available to all signed up members of the Likud. There are about 120,000 of them in Israel. They will all go to votes to polling stations around the country. They will then cast their vote for the individuals who have put themselves forward, who they would most like to see on the list. And according to the number of polls that each individual receives, the list will be constructed in that particular order. And of course, the order is very important. There is a huge amount of pride attached to, well, not only pride, but also pride and importance attached to those people who get their names at the top of the list, because obviously they are more likely, A, to be elected as members of Knesset, and B, they will also are more likely to get top jobs in the event that the Likud is actually voted into government, because of course the Prime Minister will be forced to take into consideration that the general will of the party is to support certain individuals beyond other people, and those individuals are more likely to get top jobs in the next government. So this is a very important process. Labour Party, as well as the Meretz Party, will be choosing their lists in a similar way by having primaries. Other parties will just have a committee of people, or maybe even the leader. In the case of Benny Gantz's party, apparently the constitution of that party says that Benny Gantz will choose whoever goes on the list. And that's the end of that. So he will construct the list. And so there's accusations of cronyism and all manner of other things involved in putting these lists together. Mm-hmm. The primaries, of course, are more akin to the American style of doing things,
right,
where they have these huge primaries and people getting very involved to determine who will be the candidate for president in this, in the case of the Americans. So here it's used to determine the list. A lot of controversy around the Likud list. And in particular, there's a lot of controversy around the return of Gideon Saar, who's really the only person who's coming out of the Likud and actually presenting something of a challenge to the Prime Minister for his position. Prime Minister Netanyahu, of course, will not be voted upon in today's primary. He is automatically going to be number one on the list as the party leader. So he doesn't submit himself for election, but everybody else does. And so there's a lot of vying for positions, particularly at the top of the list. And as I say, Gideon Saar is the person who's really creating a lot of waves within the Likud, amongst other things. There's a lot of divisiveness within the Likud, if you really want to go into the detail. But Gideon Saar is certainly the person who is creating the news at the moment, because he's been on a 4-year hiatus from politics. He's now returned, and he's openly said that he would like to be number one on the list, and he would like to present a challenge to Prime Minister Netanyahu. We've already spoken about the fact that Netanyahu hasn't really done much to groom any successes within the party, but it seems as if though we're now having somebody in the name of Gideon Saar who's actually standing up and actually challenging the Prime Minister for his position as leader of the party.
Incredible. So we'll keep a close eye on that, and no doubt this is really the beginning of that whole story. Other news, two terrorists were killed yesterday when they attacked IDF soldiers near Jenin. What's known about this incident, Anthony?
Well, what we know and what's been reported in the press, by the way, in very, very small articles, it seems to be kind of relegated to back page or middle page in the newspapers, I mean, which is quite surprising, because this was quite a serious attack where two terrorists actually threw bombs at an IDF unit that was stationed near the city, which is actually a Palestinian Authority-controlled city of Jenin. But, of course, we do have IDF soldiers around that area. Mm-hmm. It's in the Wadi Ara area. And, of course, there are a lot of Israeli towns and villages around that area. And, of course, IDF soldiers are stationed there. But apparently there were two terrorists who threw bombs at this IDF unit, and they were immediately neutralized, is the word that was used. But ultimately, it seems as if one was killed on the spot, and the other was injured to the point where he died of his wounds afterwards. So this comes as a result of these explosive devices that were thrown towards IDF soldiers, and they responded immediately. And that's really what we know at the moment, you know, in terms of what's been reported. Nothing else really took place. There seems to have been no real follow up after that. But what we do know as well from yesterday was that there was an order that was issued to destroy the home of a Hamas terrorist who was involved in the shooting of the Ishran family. As we know, unfortunately, Shira's baby, Amiyad Israel, died. The unborn baby that was born prematurely after that. And of course, the parents were quite badly injured in that incident, and that particular terrorist Asim Barghouti was also involved in another shooting, in another terror attack, and he was ultimately shot and killed a little while ago by soldiers from the Givati Brigade. But what we do know is that the orders have now been issued for the destruction of his home as a reprisal against his involvement in those attacks. So just another little piece of news that's come up on that particular area.
Yeah, and as you said, interesting that it's getting coverage, but it's not the coverage, I think, that we would have expected.
Well, it's not the coverage that that one would expect when such serious attacks take place. And yet in Israel, it's kind of, you know, business as usual kind of situation. In any country around the world, I expect that when such an incident would take place where soldiers are being attacked and explosive devices thrown at them, risking their lives, that this would get a little bit more serious coverage than what we've been getting over here. And I think it's a combination of, well, just another one of these incidents that our soldiers have to contend with almost daily, which is a sad statement in itself. But also, I think a lot of the election coverage is just, you know, taking over the front pages, and a lot of political commentary about the primaries and about the elections that are coming up, the various personnel. There's lots and lots of shenanigans going on within each of the individual parties, lots of changes taking place on the political horizon. And so I think that that's really what's contributing towards, you know, most of the other stories being relegated to the middle or back pages.
Finally, research has shown very close links between Hamas and BDS. Now, of course, I'm not shocked by this, and nor will anybody be, anybody who follows the news and follows follow these trends. None of us will be shocked. But what is the research now that that is indicating this?
Well, I think it's important for us to talk about this and make it public, even though I suspect that at the end of the day, with this whole BDS discussion, those people who believe in it will believe in it, and those people who don't believe in it are not really available to be convinced otherwise. But for those people who are kind of wanting to believe in it but are not really sure, I think that this will hopefully really convince people that the whole idea of BDS really comes from, you know, those people who want to see Israel destroyed rather than want to see the Palestinians promoted. And I think there is a distinction between those two. I don't think that they are mutually exclusive. I think that there are a lot of Israelis who would like to see the Palestinians as a people strengthened in a positive way while supporting Israel. So this is a particular piece of research that has been undertaken by the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, and they found more than 100 links between Hamas and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine and the BDS movement. So it's those, really those three organizations that seem to be very much intertwined with each other. And it seems as if though something like 30 members of Hamas and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine actually hold senior positions within the BDS movement, obviously promoting non-governmental organizations. Many of these people have actually been in prison for terror-related crimes and things like that. And they are the people who are driving BDS from behind the scenes. So you might not necessarily see it publicly, but these are people who are driving BDS. And I guess it would come as no surprise to some of us who've actually looked into BDS and where it comes from and what the background is. And of course, the fact that Omar Barghouti is actually the founding committee member, the founding person of, or at least one of the main founding people of the BDS movement. And there's no doubt that, you know, Barghouti, it's the same Barghouti name that we just heard a few moments ago, the Barghouti who was involved in the shooting of the Ishran family. So, you know, there is certainly a common trend, a common thread that goes through that. And of course, there's also Barghouti who is in prison and who's a pretender to the Fatah crown, who we've, you know, many people feel if there was an election these days in the Palestinian Authority area that he would probably be voted in to succeed Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, sitting in a prison right now. And so this Barghouti trend goes all the way through wherever you see. And even though some of it is related to Hamas and some of it to Fatah, which is a little confusing, there seems to be absolutely no doubt from this research that has been put together that shows individual names of people who are actually very, very active within BDS, BDS National Committee members, who are Hamas members, who are linked to terror organizations, to terror activities. And for people who have any doubt in their mind about what the exact objective of the BDS movement is, I think that they would find this very, very interesting reading to see who the individuals are and where they come from.
Well, it's interesting because Iqbal Yasat, who is a notorious anti-Semite and anti-Israel human, tweeted the following. He says, in fact, it was yesterday that he tweeted this. MRN, he's the part of this MRN organization, hashtag BDS bites. Zionist apartheid regime shows signs of reeling from global boycott divestment and sanctions. We are Hamas. We are PFLP. We love Leila Khalid. Long live hashtag BDS. And of course, he copies BDS South Africa, BDS Movement, BDS Hamas, etc. So I'm not even sure that there's much of a pretense anymore in many ways.
Right. So I think that, you know, that's really coming out openly. I mean, by the way, just another point, if that, you know, the statement that BDS is crippling the economy, crippling Israel in any way is completely incorrect. Because when we look at the statistics and we see what damage BDS has done over the years, then it's almost inconsequential. I mean, most of the damage really has been done in public relations terms rather than, you know, terms of dollars on the ground, feet on the ground.
We do have to end it, but there's an article in Fin24 this morning saying Clover, that South Africa, gets a 4.8 billion rand buyout offer from Israeli group. Clover has received a buyout offer from a group of investors led by Israeli Central Bottling Company, which has planned to expand the dairy business across sub-Saharan Africa and values the company at 4.8 billion rand. The group offers 25 rand a share for the Johannesburg-based producer, compared with a Friday closing price of 20 rand, Clover said in a statement Monday. So
we'll talk about that for sure.
We most certainly will. It is 8:01. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. Fascinating and in-depth as always. Here's your news with Zanati.